All right, so now what they were doing here, according to verse 6, they were sending a present down to Pharaoh to buy his favor and helping them against Assyria. That'll not work out for their good. Now, that whole chapter is rather lengthy here, but I do want to call attention to one point in it, here, verse 27 and 8. Behold, the name of Jehovah cometh from far, burning with anger, and a thick rising smoke. His lips are full of indignation, and his tongue is as a devouring fire, and his breath is as an overflowing stream that reacheth even unto the neck, to sift the nation with a sieve of destruction, and a bridle that causeth to err shall be in the jaws of the peoples. Now, here he's not only going to punish his people, but here these that allow themselves to be used, he's going to use them also. Now in chapter 31, now he comes directly. Now they've already sent their present unto Egypt. Back there on those beasts, we talked about that several weeks ago. Now verse 31, woe to them that go down to Egypt for help, that rely on horses. Right? Now what they do now, they go to Egypt, woe to them that go to Egypt, and they rely on horses. That is, they look here to horses for help and strength rather than Jehovah. They're looking for some other way of doing things, getting things done. So instead of trusting in Jehovah, now they go down to Egypt here to get help from Egypt. And he goes on to discuss what that, how that's going to turn out for them and what will happen to them. Now verse 8, and the Assyrians shall fall by the sword, but not of man. That is, God would take care of the Assyrians. You don't have to go down into Egypt and get help from these heathen people and get horses and rely on horses. Assyria is threatening Judah. That was the time of David of Sennacherib, in all probability, and they were threatening them, threatening Jerusalem. But God said, I'll take care of that. Now, in our lesson a little bit later, in chapter 37, God destroyed 185,000 in one night. God handled the situation. Well, what's the lesson to us? The same thing is just as true now as then. Let's rely on God. Our strength is in Him. Be strong in the Lord and the strength of His might, and put on the whole armor of God. That is the source of our strength. It's in Jehovah if we just learn the lesson. So that one then is a woe unto them that go down into Egypt, and what how God will devour, He'll take care of the Assyrian. So lifeless idols and fleshly horses cannot save. Same thing true today. Whatever they rely upon other than Jehovah, there's no salvation in that particular one. This is a great lesson I think that we'll learn from Isaiah. God's over and over, the Lord says, wait for Jehovah. Trust in Jehovah. Rely upon Him. Trying to get His people to do that then, and all through the New Testament's the same message. Trust in the Lord. Rely upon Him. Now in chapter 32, which we had the last lesson a couple of 3 weeks ago, now here it says, behold, a king shall reign in righteousness, and princes shall rule in justice. Now I pointed out that that seems to me to be messianic. I think it is. Now that's the king's going to rule in righteousness. That's going to come. Then he describes the fool there, and also in verse 9, called upon the women to rise up and not be faithless, not be indifferent, but to take their place also in the responsibility of the condition of Israel. Now, when they shall do that, then he promises here that he'll pour out the Spirit upon them in verse 15, and he's going to bless them richly. And I like that verse 17, and the work of righteousness shall be peace, and the effect of righteousness, quietness, and confidence forever. My habitation and my people shall abide in a peaceful habitation and in safe dwelling places. Now, in chapter 33, our lesson tonight, we have the final of these woes, the sixth. Woe to thee that destroyest, and thou wast not destroyed. Right? Now, here is woe upon the destroyer. Right? Upon the destroyer. Who is the destroyer here? The destroyer, of course, is Assyria. Woe upon the destroyer. That's the destroyer, but it hasn't been yet destroyed. Well, that is Assyria, for God is going to take care of this situation. Now, any nation that sets out to destroy other nations going to suffer his punishment. That's why I think George Washington gave the best advice to the people of his day, the rulers, the Congress, when he told them to make no entangling alliances. Don't make alliances with foreign people. Stay here and tend to your own business. We haven't been doing that, and so we're in a terrible mess. The country is throughout the world. Assyria tried to conquer the world and meddled in all the other nations. It fell. Babylon did the same thing. Medo-Persia the same thing. Alexander the same thing. Rome the same thing. And every nation since that has sought to meddle in other nations and neglect its own has always come to naught. And we will too. We're heading that direction. Well, let's look at chapter 33. Woe to thee that destroyest, and thou wast not destroyed. Hadn't been yet. And dealest treacherously, and they dealt not treacherously with thee. When thou hast ceased to destroy, thou shalt be destroyed. And when thou hast made an end of dealing treacherously, they shall deal treacherously with thee. All right, now that's talking about Assyria. Turn back to 2 Kings, the 18th chapter, and let me note there what he's talking about. Hezekiah was king at that time, and the Assyrian king, this particular time, it was Sennacherib. And now Sennacherib invaded the land here. Let me see where I want to start. Let me start with verse 10. At the end of 3 years, they took it in the 6th year of Hezekiah, which was the 9th year of Hoshea, king of Israel. Samaria was taken. And the king of Assyria carried Israel away unto Assyria and put them in Halah and on the Habor, the river of Gozan, and in the cities of the Medes, because they obeyed not the voice of Jehovah their God, but trespassed his covenant, even all that Moses the servant of Jehovah commanded, and would not hear it nor do it. Now that was a northern tribe of Israel. Now he turns to Judah. Now in the 14th year of King Hezekiah, did Sennacherib, king of Assyria, come up against all the fortified cities of Judah and took them. Now note, and Hezekiah, king of Judah, sent to the king of Assyria to Lachish, about 22 miles from Jerusalem. He was besieging Lachish, saying, I have offended. Return from me. That which thou puttest on thee will I bear. And the king of Assyria appointed unto Hezekiah, king of Judah, 300 talents of silver and 30 talents of gold. And Hezekiah gave him all the silver that was found in the house of Jehovah and in the treasures of the king's house. At that time did Hezekiah cut off the gold from the doors of the temple of Jehovah and from the pillars which Hezekiah, king of Judah, had overlaid, and gave it to the king of Assyria. But now what the king did. And the king of Assyria sent Tartan, Rabsaris, and Rabshakeh. Now these are not names, but titles, military positions, from Lachish to King Hezekiah with a great army unto Jerusalem. Now, I'll not read any more than that, but the point is, here he imposed upon Hezekiah this great amount of tribute. Hezekiah paid it, gave it to him. Now, instead of leaving him alone going home, now he sends an army over there to take Jerusalem also. I don't know whether he wasn't pleased with it or what turned him, or just his cruelty or what. But that's what the prophet is talking about when he says, thou that you destroyed, but are not destroyed, you are treacherous, and they'll deal treacherously with you. And so this is the occasion or the incident that's in Isaiah's mind. Now notice Isaiah's prayer. Lord Jehovah, be gracious unto us. We have waited for thee. Be thou our arm every morning, our salvation also in the time of trouble. Now, every morning. That suggests unto us the constant necessity, constant need, our constant need for God's help, for God to take care of us. As he says here, be gracious unto us day by day. The blessings of God yesterday are not enough for today, nor what I did yesterday enough to satisfy today. This lesson is taught in Ecclesiastes, and that's a favorite book of so many of us. It's taught there man's constant need for dependence upon God. That is, day by day means, so to you, Jesus said, sufficient unto the day is the evil thereof. So I need blessings today, and that's what we're taught in Ecclesiastes, to trust in Jehovah, accept God's blessings day by day. But we need them, and yesterday will not suffice for today. We realize that. And so this is what his point is here. Be gracious unto us. We have waited for thee, be thou our arm every morning, our strength every morning, our salvation also in the time of trouble. Now, I may not have trouble every day, but when trouble comes, you be our salvation, be our strength. At the noise of the tumult, the peoples are fled. Now, people is plural. That would be these nations that had tried to destroy Jerusalem. At the lifting up of thyself, the nations are scattered. Now, he realizes that God is able to scatter these enemies. And he prays for him to do that. And your spoil shall be gathered, talking now to those who have tried to destroy Jerusalem, and your spoil shall be gathered as a caterpillar gathereth. And it will be all that will be gathered. It will be stripped. As locusts leap, shall men leap upon them. That is, these enemies that have despoiled other nations. I want to turn to that in a moment. Jehovah is exalted, for he dwelleth on high. He hath filled Zion with justice and righteousness. And there shall be stability in thy times, abundance of salvation, wisdom and knowledge. The fear of Jehovah is thy treasure. That is talking to his own people now. Now if you turn to the 36th chapter, 7th, I forget which I'll get to in a moment, the 36th, 7th chapter, and the 37th chapter here, and verses 36 to 38 there. Now note, and now this one's Sennacherib sends his army against Jerusalem. Now Hezekiah prayed, Isaiah prayed. So in answer to this prayer, God, notice what God did. And the angel of Jehovah went forth and smote in the camp of the Assyrians 185,000. And when men arose early in the morning, behold, these were all dead bodies. So Sennacherib, king of Assyria, departed and went and returned and dwelt at Nineveh. Now, Sennacherib, the king of Assyria, he was not there. He was still over Lachish, but he sent 185,000 to besiege and destroy Jerusalem. Now, God destroyed those. Now, when he landed, he took the remnant of his army, what it had left, and he rushed, went on back to Nineveh. Now, I know this is 20 years later, though, and it came to pass, as he was worshiping in the house of Nisroch, his god, that Adrammelech and Sharezer, his son, smote him with a sword, and they escaped into the land of Ararat, and Esarhaddon, his son, reigned in his stead. Now, that next verse is really 20 years after. Now, this is 701, when 185,000 killed. It was 681 when he was slain by his two sons. But you'll notice that Isaiah paid no attention to the 20 years. He just goes on to tell what happened to him. Right? But he got the idea that as soon as he got home, he was slain, but he wasn't. 20 years later. And his two sons slew him, they fled, and the third son took over the throne. Esarhaddon took over the throne now. All right. So this is what he's talking about in this. And so when they arose and saw all of this army dead out there and all of that spoil, the equipment, the goods that they had, the people went out and stripped them of all of their spoils that they had there. So the prophecy was fulfilled. Any question on that? Well, God always keeps his promise. Behold the valiant ones, probably the soldiers, cry without. The ambassadors of peace weep bitterly. Now, these are those that have been sent to Sennacherib with the tribute money, the silver and the gold. Now, when they come back, you see, I just went on over to this. They're not, those soldiers haven't been killed yet. But now, the valiant ones would be the soldiers. The soldiers weep, you'll notice, cry without. The ambassadors of peace weep bitterly because they've taken the tribute to the king of Assyria. He had dishonestly accepted it and then sent an army of 185,000, a detachment of his army, to take Jerusalem. This is the point of this lesson that we're going to get to now. That we barely, the highways lie waste, the wayfaring man ceases. I know, what does that mean? No one would, because of the Assyrians, no one would be caught in the highways. They'd have to slip around through the vineyards and through the trees to get where they were going. So they would, the highways lie waste, the wayfaring man ceases. That is the man that's on a journey, that's going somewhere. He ceases, no more, there's no more of them, because they just don't dare to go anywhere. Now note, the enemy has broken the covenant. That's the covenant of that money that whatever he was going to do for that money. He has despised the cities, that is, he has destroyed them, he has no regard to human rights and human life. He regardeth not man, that is, he has no regard for three things there that are charged against him. Broken the covenant, he has despised the cities, he regardeth not man. God's not life. Doesn't honor that. Now, the land mourneth and languisheth. Now notice the four very rich sections of the land. The land mourneth and languisheth. Well, of course, a land doesn't mourn as a man does, but point is, in its desolation, it shares in the grief of man. You have that idea over and over in the Bible. Right, now notice the land mourneth and languisheth. Four sections. Lebanon is confounded and withereth away. Now Lebanon was those great mountains to the north. As you look up here to the north here, and your river comes on down. It comes on down into the Dead Sea here. Now here you Lebanon, here were these mountains up here to the north. There were high mountains here, high range of mountains over here. Now these mountains here, Lebanon, they were noted for their beautiful cedars. And fine fir trees, but now they're languished. Now whether they died or withered, or that's just a figurative speech, I don't know about that. Withered away. Sharon is like a desert. Sharon was just over here, you remember, as the land came down here, when it started out here and came on back down. Now this was Mount Carmel. Now here was that beautiful valley south of Mount Carmel. This is the Valley of Sharon, there. The Rose of Sharon. Right? Now that was a very verdant plain country, the plain of Sharon, rather. A very verdant plain there. Right? Now it languishes also. Now notice, Sharon is like a desert. And Bashan and Carmel shake off their leaves. Now, this is Carmel here. Carmel, I believe they pronounce it. But here's Mount Carmel here, and it juts out into the sea. That's Mount Carmel. Up here there's your Mount Lebanon. Here is your Valley of Sharon. Here's Carmel. And over here, just north of this country right in here, is the land of Bashan. That was noted for its oaks and for its fine grazing area. And the finest grazing part of it. So now these four very fertile, rich, green, luxuriant section of the country all mourn along with the people. They don't produce just now. I don't know whether it's drought, I don't know what happened, but I wasn't pleased with land, but the idea is they shake off their leaves. Now will I rise at Jehovah. Now will I lift up myself. Now notice the three or four things God does. Now I will arise, that's first, that's over. Now will I lift up myself, that's second. Now will I be exalted. Three things, I will rise, I will lift up myself, I will be exalted by taking an active part in that which is taking place at that time. Now he turns to the people. Ye shall, he turns to the Assyrians here. Ye shall conceive chaff, ye shall bring forth stubble. That simply means your great grand ideas that you have of conquest are going to all come to naught. Here they have an idea they're going to conquer all this country and take back all the booty with them, but God said that won't be so. He used a figure here, you will conceive chaff here, and you bring forth stubble. Your breath is a fire that shall devour you, your breath. In other words, you are self-destructive. your very plans tend to your own destruction. And that's true. Wasn't that true of Hitler? Hitler's idea of conquering and ruling the world, but within that, the fire of his own breath destroyed. So it is with nations like the same thing going to happen to all nations. Going to happen to Russia. Going to happen to Muslim nations. Going to happen to us if we don't tend our own business at home and look at our own affairs. Try to rule the world. It's self-destructive. And I think that's always true, that the idea there is that an individual's own death will devour him. And the people shall be as the burnings of lime, as thorns cut down that are burned in the fire. Now when you burn lime, what do? You put the stone in, you get them hot, and after a while it becomes like chalk, mash it up, and it's just dust. Lime. What do you do with thorns when you put them in the fire? They crackle, burn, and just a few ashes. So the idea is, you are determining your own destruction. And I think we are. I think every nation does. I think the seeds of destruction are always sown in that which is human. Anything that's human has the element of destruction within itself. Right? Now our own nation is headed for self-destruction. 50 years or 60 years ago, well, when it was World War I, I guess it's 70 now, 70 years ago when we fought World War I and from then to World War II, this nation, there was not a nation on earth that could destroy it. Not a one. Now what's happening to it? It's destroying itself from within. Its own breath is consuming it, as you would burn a stone here into lime, mash it up into powder, or thorns in a fire there, that crackle and become ashes. We're headed for our own destruction. I don't know whether people like that idea or not, but I know it's so. I know that's so. I know so it's always been and will continue to be. All right, and he moves on. Now he goes on to say here, and the people shall, yes, I read that, burn the fire. The fire shall devour you. Now 13, hear ye that are far off what I have done, and ye that are near, both those that far and near, acknowledge my might. Whether you're far and hear about this, or close by, acknowledge the strength and the power of Jehovah. Acknowledge my might. The sinners in Zion are afraid. Trembling hath seized the godless ones. Who among us can dwell with a devouring fire? Who among us can dwell with everlasting burnings? Now, don't you look at that. The sinners, those that disregard God's law, that miss the point, miss the target. All right, the sinners in Zion are afraid. Trembling hath seized the godless ones. Those that have no reverence for Jehovah. Godlessness is irreverence, impiety. They have no pious respect and regard for God. So here are the sinners that violate his law and that have no regard for God himself. Godless ones. Who among us can dwell with a devouring fire when the fire of God's wrath devours the city and the people? Who can withstand it? Paul said in Romans 1:18, the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men and him to the truth and unrighteousness. That wrath ultimately is poured out upon the wicked, upon a wicked nation. So who among us can dwell with everlasting burnings? Those burnings from God, an everlasting burning. Now, who can dwell with everlasting burnings? The sinners can't, but none of who can. He that walketh righteously, that's first. Second, and speaketh uprightly. Third, he that despiseth the gain of oppressions, that is, an individual takes bribes, that shaketh his hands with taking a bribe. Next, that stoppeth his ears from hearing of blood, and shutteth his eyes, from looking upon evil. He shall dwell on high. His place of defense shall be the munitions of rocks. His bread shall be given him. His water shall be sure. Now, when you see them, when you compare up here, this idea of these individuals, these sinners, the sinners and the godless ones, how can they endure a divine judgment? They can't. They're the ones against whom it is. Now, who then can stand in the presence of God? Who can withstand this devouring fire? And so now he describes them. Look at it again. He that walketh righteously, that is, before God, does the right thing, that speaketh uprightly, always speaks truth in his heart and in his mouth. What? Third, he that despises the gain of oppressions, that shaketh his hands from taking a bribe. Now here, you offer him a bribe. No, he shakes his head. Not going to take it. No, I'm not going to take it. Oh, God, keep it. I'm not going to take it at all. I'm not going to take a bribe. He that shakes his hands from taking a bribe. All right, that was the third of these fellows, his hands from taking a bribe. It stops his ears from hearing of blood. That is, he's not going to be guilty of it and hear an accusation, and shutteth his eyes from looking upon evil, who refuses to look upon that which is evil. Now, this is the fellow that's going to be able to stand. Does God change? No. Do principles change? No. The same principle that held then holds today. There's a contrast between the two. And I think these lessons in Isaiah are as timeless as God himself and as man. They're principles that endure. All right, now these individuals now, he shall dwell on high, his place of defense shall be the munitions of rocks. That is, there is a high fortress, and that's the place of his protection. He is in that fortress of Zion. He come unto God. His bread shall be given. God will take care and provide for him. That's what Jesus said. That seek ye first the kingdom, these things added unto him. His waters shall be sure. In other words, if I do right, God is going to do his part. He's going to take care. And the great lessons. And I say, well, you know that. You've heard that 100 times in your life or more. But don't you need it restated every once in a while? I know we do. I need to refresh my mind. I need to restate this. I need to reimpress it on in my life. I'm so forgetful. And so are you. All right. Now he said, thine eyes shall see the king in his beauty. They shall behold a land that reacheth afar. And who is this king? There are some commentators that think this king is Hezekiah. Others think it's Jehovah. Others think that is the Messiah. Now, I think it's the Messiah. I think it's the Christ, the one to come, the one that Isaiah says so much about. So I think it's the Messiah, and here's the reason why, in the very context, when he says, they shall behold a land that reacheth afar. Very far. Well, now, we read in Zechariah, and also I forget the psalm, at least the second, I'm not sure. But we read in the psalm, one of the psalms, and in Zechariah 9, and verse 10, his dominion shall be from sea to sea, and from the river to the ends of the earth. That's Christ, because God is the same. But we'll see the king here, and I shall see the king in his beauty. And I think he's talking about Christ, and all the beauty and the glory that he manifested. We see him in all of that. Well, and we see a dominion from sea to sea. All right, thine eyes shall see this. Thy heart shall muse on the terror, and you remember it, but it won't bother you now. Where is he that counted? Where is he that weighed the tribute? Where is he that counted the towers? Counted. First he counted the tribute. Then, and they kept it, when Hezekiah sent it, and deceived the people, kept it, and then tried to destroy the city too. But now, count the towers. What is to count the towers? I think it means, he walked about Zion, the city of Jerusalem, rather, and counted its towers to see which he could take and which he would leave. And back in the 48th Psalm here, in verse 12, walk about Zion and go round about her, number the towers thereof. Mark ye well her bulwarks, consider her palaces, that you may tell it to the generation following. For this God is our God forever and ever. He will be our guide, even unto death. So, no doubt this passage over in Isaiah refers to Sennacherib sending his men to walk about Jerusalem and to count the towers. And the tower was the place of the soldiers, where they were there to fight from different directions, here on the corner here of the building. And now then, count these, and how many do we have, will we have to resist us? Which ones look the weakest? But this Zion is God's dwelling place. So when you count the towers, don't forget that God dwells therein. And when the battle was over, this one of these, the towers all still there. And I don't want to miss it. And I like that idea. Walk about the towers of present Zion, our spiritual Zion. Walk about, count the towers. Where shall the enemy attack? But when you get to attacking, spiritual Zion will still be the same. That's what he's teaching. Great, great lesson. Great lesson. And he that counted the towers, thou shalt not see the fierce people, a people of a deep speech that thou canst not comprehend, of a strange tongue that thou canst not understand. Why won't you comprehend them? Because they're gone. Why, yeah, now look at what he says now. Thou shalt not see the people. Why? Because they're dead. Next morning, they're all dead. So of this fierce countenance and a speech you didn't understand. But God took care of the situation. No, he will. Lack of faith, I think, is our greatest weakness. Look upon Zion, the city of our solemnity, that is, of our feast, set feast. Thine eyes shall see Jerusalem, a quiet habitation, a tent that shall not be removed, the stakes whereof shall never be plucked up, neither shall any of the cords thereof be broken. Now there, in the spiritual Zion, remember he says here, thine eyes shall see the king in beauty. So here, as you see the king, here the towers of Zion, here the temple within it, I mean there's the tabernacle within it here, inward, the stakes are driven deep, the ropes are strong, it won't be destroyed. This tent won't stand. It's God's tent, God's dwelling place, among his people. It'll always stand. It'll never be destroyed, never be removed. It's a quiet habitation. Now you're talking about the spiritual Zion now. And that because old Zion there was that. They always had that problem in the fact that the spiritual Zion would never be destroyed. Well, look a little further. But here, there, Jehovah will be with us in majesty, a place of broad rivers and streams wherein shall go no galley with oars, neither shall galleon ship pass thereby. Now, of course, Jerusalem was on a mountain here, hills all around, valleys, no such water. But Isaiah was familiar with old cities of Babylon and Nineveh, and then down in Egypt there, Hierapolis, and those which the city was built in, and they were surrounded with a moat of waters. And so ships could come in there, and from these ships attack the city there. And it was for protection, and yet these ships would bring the soldiers in and they would attack. But now, there'd be no such thing in the spiritual Zion. You won't see these galley ships attacking Zion. Destroying Zion. Zion will always destroy them. Now, they've tried, yes, but they always failed. Now, no galleon ship passed thereby. This is using a figure of the great cities of that day, which Isaiah was familiar. For Jehovah is our judge. Jehovah is our lawgiver. Jehovah is our king. Now, notice, he is our judge. He is our lawgiver. He is our king. Now, what will he do? Jehovah our King, he will save us. Now God will save us. And that's the faith of Isaiah and the faith of a few, the remnant that stood by him. There's always a remnant. And this faithful remnant will see this. We are the remnant today. We'll see the same thing. Our God is our God through Christ is our King, our lawgiver, our judge. He will save us. Thy tacklings are loosed. They could not strengthen the foot of their mast. They could not spread the sail. Then was the prey of a great spoil divided. The lame took the prey. Now here then, over against Zion, spiritual Zion, are the enemies. Now notice the ship. He likened them unto a ship that comes against the city now and never to destroy it. But now notice what happens to it. The tacklings are loosed. That is, all those ropes and everything that go up and pull up the sails, they're loose. Now, notice the second here. They could not strengthen the foot of the mast. They couldn't get the mast and those cross boards that they built down there to put the mast into. The mast wouldn't go into it there. at the foot of their mast, they could not spread the sail. Now without a mast, without tackling, without a sail, where could they go? They couldn't go. So when, since God destroyed all of that, where are they going to go? They're going anywhere. Then with the prey of a great spoil divided, the lamb took the prey. God gives the prey into their hands, and the inhabitants shall not say, I am sick. The people that dwell therein shall be forgiven their iniquity. That is spiritually. So here in a beautiful picture of Zion, which he closes this particular section of woes. Now you see, we started out with all these woes here. Now this last one here is the woe upon the destroyer, and then, along with that, the victory of the faithful. Here's the ultimate victory of the faithful. A great and beautiful chapter, I think, at least. I'm especially fond of Isaiah. I think it's the greatest of all the Old Testament books. I think it's the greatest of them. And I talked to a fellow long distance the other night, yesterday. And he said, you and I are going to begin a course in Isaiah up here where I preach. I said, who'd you say? He said, you and I. I said, I'm going to help you. I mean, I said, I'm going to use your book. And so you and I, a piece of his class up here. So that made me feel pretty good. So, but it is, it's a favorite book of mine. If I was just a little bit younger, I'd attempt a commentary on Ezekiel and Jeremiah and Daniel. So I'd have five of it. I'm too old and I'm not going to try. But anyhow, there's a great chapter. Great chapter. Now, as you look at these woes, all of these woes that God has pronounced here, woe upon the drunkards and the rulers of Samaria and Jerusalem. Woe upon Israel, the altar hearth of God, where sacrifice were all because of corruption. Woe unto them that hide their counsel from God and try to make slip around, make their alliances with others here. And then woe unto the rebellious people who rebel against God and look somewhere else for their strength and help. Woe here to them that go down into Egypt and rely upon horses. Those that would rely upon anything other than that which God provided. I was talking to a lady today that attended the lectures over at Pepperdine. There were some very liberal classes. We had a lot of classes. She said she went to one of them, and she was up in air about what she heard in there and what this fellow was teaching there about that. Where he's talking about the glory of Easter there, and how they had, where he was an elder there in Oklahoma, had a great Easter affair there at daybreak, and how now that we're getting out of our old shackles that we've been shackled with, we're beginning to free ourselves from all of that. Free to do what? Free to sin, free to rebel against God. Well, we've been free to do that. That only brings the fellow into bondage. And she was quite upset about it. That her husband's an elder of one of the churches over there, she thinks kind of a conservative church. I don't know how conservative it is, but it's not one I never attended. Don't know what got there, but it's a fine couple. They must be my very close friends. I love them. At any rate, she was quite upset at some of the things that were going on over there. I told her, well, now that just goes back down to where it began to get away. It began and gradually kept going. Never did stop. And they aren't going to stop. Aren't going to stop. They'll have instrumental music. Some of them will. Some of them already have. That church at Alameda, I said, already got instrumental music. They quit calling themselves the Church of Christ, called themselves not a Christian fellowship. But it was a Church of Christ. But no, I could say it no longer. I'm glad to change the name. I don't think they're the Lord's Church anymore. But these are things, and what we learn from the prophets is how easy it is to get away, and how displeased God is when we leave His standard, whether it be faith in Him, or morality, or His system of worship, whatever God has ordained, His test of faith. When we leave these, God is always displeased. We bring upon ourselves our own destruction. Spiritual destruction. Now, next time I'm going to take 34 and 5. There are two chapters that I think serve as sort of a summary of all that he's been talking about up until now. Chapter 34 talks about the judgment against Edom, which is a symbol of the world. And then the glory of Zion, God's redeemed people, in 35, which is a symbol of the redeemed people by the Lord. I think that'll be a great lesson. I think you'll enjoy it very much. All right. Well, we'll stop right there.